Matt, what's that duck doing here?
I rented it.
You rented a duck?
Yeah. It's a circular economy thing. You rent a duck, you take it, you put it in the garden, it eats all the snails. Instead of using pesticides or running around taking them.
Hey, we should do a podcast about the circular economy.
That's a great idea. Let's do it. But in the meantime, we have to put the duck over to the
Maybe we
side.
can maybe the duck can explain to us what the circular economy is. No, I don't understand that at all. No, let's
I
push.
think it's talking about our new podcast, Future Europe, because a circular economy is very important to the future. And in fact, one of the episodes in our new podcast, which is starting now, Future Europe, is going to be about the circular economy. It's the one from Holland, because each of the episodes is going to be about a project somewhere in Europe, one from each of the 28 EU countries, that tells you something about the future of Europe. And the one in the Netherlands is actually a circular economy project, and which is very interesting because we have two, one Dutch and one Dutch-speaking guest on our show today. So subscribe to Future Europe so that you won't miss that episode when it eventually comes out. It's going to be over the course of the second half of this year. We'll be doing that podcast. And subscribe to this podcast because we're not done. We've got tons of fantastic episodes coming up on A Dictionary of Finance from the European Investment Bank. This is A Dictionary of Finance from the European Investment Bank. And we were just talking about yoga. While we were waiting to record this, we were talking about stretching ourselves. So I'm going to stretch myself today by trying a little bit of Dutch Flemish pronunciation because we have two guests today. Arnold Verbeek, how is that for some Dutch?
Sounds good. Almost perfectly Dutch.
Really?
Yes.
All right, good. So perhaps if it was almost perfectly Dutch, maybe that means that I'm kind of Flemish, which would be the language of Lisbeth Gover. Oh, no, I said it wrong, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, Lisbeth Hoovers.
Yeah, that's much better.
Oh, you see, well, I grew up saying Van Gogh, which is, that's no good. Van Gogh, is that right?
Van Gogh.
Van Gogh. Okay, so there we got some Dutch.
Almost
So
there.
I stretched myself without doing any yoga. Arnold is a senior advisor in the Innovation Finance Advisory at the European Investment Bank. And he's also got some interesting linguistic talent
Yeah,
from both ends.
in addition to Van Gogh, you can also say, what else can you say very well?
I can say a lot of things, but for example, maybe in Icelandic, I can say útrás.
Útrás.
Yeah.
And
Or
what
in
is that?
Greek, as a matter of fact, because I grew up also in Greece, I could also say kalimera, which is good morning to our listeners, maybe.
How do you come to have Icelandic and Greek? And what's the connection between the two?
Yeah, well, let me start maybe quickly how it was. I grew up in Greece, actually, so I studied there. My parents went there in the 70s, 80s, actually, early 80s. And then I moved back to the Netherlands, so I went to a Greek school. And then after that, in the Netherlands, when I was studying, I met my wife through Erasmus, which is, of course, a fantastic vehicle for internationalization and mixed couples, right? And she happens to be from Iceland, and that's how I started, speaking Iceland, Icelandic, kind of maybe an obligation in the beginning. And the funny thing is that there is a connection between the two languages because the pronunciation of a particular letter, thotn, theta, is present in both languages. So I always say and make the joke that I speak Icelandic because I speak Greek, which is of course a world apart, yeah, between those two.
They did have some great old sagas in both languages, I suppose. Lisbeth, you're an environmental engineer by training, so you're an engineer now in the Advanced Materials Division of the Innovation Department here at the European Investment Bank. Advanced materials, so I guess that means that your life revolves around all kinds of crazy materials. You probably don't have much time to go out in the garden and just dig down and get your hands dirty. You're working on all these innovative things.
Well, on the contrary, I need to look for something completely different than what I'm doing in the office. And that's why I do some gardening. And this gardening is a bit related to the topic that we discussed today, circular economy. It's what's called permaculture. And that's doing gardening or growing vegetables, but without using fertilizers or bad chemicals to get away of your snails. No, you put your plants together in such a way that they resolve their issues that they have with snails or others. So you put, for instance, flowers together with tomatoes or tomatoes next to your strawberries, and it all gets a better taste if you put them together. So it's nice, you learn from nature on how plants work together, and you implement that in your own garden.
And you rent a duck sometimes.
No, I'm not renting a duck, but you can.
This is a
permaculture
thing?
It's a permaculture thing. You can rent a duck in Luxembourg. It's a funny thing, and you get it for a day, and it eats your snails, and in the end of the day, they come and pick it up. So
you might get attached to the duck.
Yeah.
I think the funny thing is what Lisbeth just described is actually one of the key models in the circular economy. Symbiosis, right, Lisbeth, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so symbiosis.
The coexisting of different plants and the fact that one benefits from the other, and there is a kind of coexistence, right? That brings us maybe to one of the important models, I would say, in circular economy.
But before we get to that, maybe we should define what circular economy is.
Yeah.
So how do we define that?
Well, maybe it's easier to start with what we have right now, which we refer to as a linear economy or a take, make, use and dispose economy, where we are taking a lot of resources out of the ground, out of the earth. We are transforming or producing a lot of products out of these raw materials. Then we are using it. And when we are fed up of it, we just throw it away. Now, if we look at that line, we see already that there are a number of issues. For instance, looking at this extraction of raw materials, currently we are extracting at a pace that is much faster than that these raw materials can be replenished. So we are already having some issues with materials. We call them critical raw materials, where the source is under pressure. If we then look at the end of that line and the waste production, we all know about the plastic soup, that if we go the same direction by 2020, we will have more plastic in the ocean than fish. So we see that there are a number of issues and there is a need for a change. Now, circular economy is not about taking that line and just doing a little bit more recycling and then turning it into a circle. It's much more fundamental than that. It's really about a fundamental shift in the way that we are thinking, the way that we are behaving, and the way that we are consuming. So the first thing that we need to do is shorten that line. So we actually, in the end, we want to eliminate the extraction of raw materials, and we want to eliminate the production of waste. And then we have this shorter line, and we bend it into a circle, and that's then this new economic model that is not based on virgin raw materials, but it's based on secondary raw materials, that raw materials that are already into the economy.
How is that different from recycling, though? I remember seeing on bottles and recycling this recycling image, which is also kind of in a shape of a circle or arrows linking to each other, which makes me kind of think of the circular economy. So how, if we get really good at recycling what we waste, how does circular economy differ from that?
The difference is that now we are only thinking about end of life. Indeed, we need to recycle, we need to have efficient waste management. Circular economy gets our thinking much more further into the chain. It's about the design, which is called eco-design, where we think about, before we are producing a product, how are we going to design it, what materials are we using, and how are we producing it, so that at end of life, it can be not recycled, we have to think a bit further, it can be easily upgraded, repaired, and remanufactured, so it can go into a second, a third, or a next life cycle.
So does that thinking also include things like how to make things last longer and be more resilient?
Yeah, it's indeed about you incentivize to produce, to having more durable, sturdy products, but in the end also products that you can easily repair or remanufacture, or in the end retrieve your raw materials, because now we are making products that you can't really retrieve the vital raw materials because we have glued them together in a way that we really can't get them apart anymore. So that's all about the eco-design, that we think about it before we are producing it.
How long has this idea been around? I've seen references to a paper written by someone called Kenneth Boulding in 1966 called The Economics of Coming Spaceship Earth, which was kind of mentioned as the start of this. Is that where this started? And how did this idea progress? And really, how important has it become?
I mean, the thing is that I think concepts come and go over time. Like, you know, I'm by training, I'm a business economist. So you cradle to cradle. Also, the Japanese have been always very strong in closed loops and zero waste production. So the concept as such, I think, in essence, in its DNA, is not that new. What I think is new is that it is now in a much broader strategic, embedded in a much broader strategic view and approach. Or as we said in a study that we did under Innofin Advisory back in 2015, from a more holistic approach, it is actually approached from different levels. And as it was introduced, it links also to education, it links to consumers, it links to the producers, the companies, it links to the financiers and the role of the financiers. So it is not only, let's say, I would say a company responsibility or a concept that you would introduce in a company. It's holistic. It goes even into policy making, of course, which we have not mentioned. But that's also very key that our policymakers, and they're doing that the last 5 to 10 years in my view, where I see that there is a lot of attention for this circular economy thinking. Maybe not mentioned and coined as such. But the concept today, circular economy, is definitely going into the direction.
I think people are fairly aware of the things that they do for recycling. You know, they have to do it, actually, in many cases. Yeah. And they like to do it, you know, they like to feel good about what they're doing there. What can people who are listening to this do to help the circular economy?
Yeah. I think that's a key question, because change always, I think, starts with yourself. I think recycling is not bad. I mean, I would like to be very clear on that. Recycling is, I think, a capability that you need in a circular economy thinking, because at the end of the day, there will be things that you need to recycle. That I think is logical. Now, what I think is that what people should do, and definitely what they maybe should try to teach their kids, is to move away from the throwing away economy, in the sense of you have a phone, or you have something that you have, you know, worked with, played with, before you throw it away. Maybe think or consider whether it can be improved, it can be fixed when it's broken, or maybe you can give it to somebody else who can play with it. So I think the big point is, for me at least, to stop thinking in terms of throwing and buying new immediately. I think that kind of behavior, I think we should stop. But that also brings us then again on a bit of a different level. If you think of particular appliances that we use in our homes, that also the producers, of course, have to make sure that the appliances can be maintained, can be fixed afterwards if there is a problem, because nowadays this is not that easy.
Well, it used to be that people or companies would make something specifically so that it would become useless after a few years, mm-hmm. and you'd have to throw it away. Is that changing now?
That's what the circular economy is all about. The linear economy is all about scale and selling a lot of stuff, because that's how they make profit. They don't want to see the product back. But in the circular economy, it's different. They want to really change from selling a product to selling a service. Like, instead of you having all of these tools in your garage, maybe you can just rent them through sharing platforms. You need to ask yourself the question, do I really need this?
Like, should you really buy a duck, or is it enough to rent a duck for a day?
Yeah, that's it. You have it in a number of things. You can rent like these home appliances that you use only once, maybe a year. You can rent even washing machines or lease washing machines, and you just pay for the use of it, which makes it that manufacturers, we make the washing machine as such that it is easy to repair or easy to upgrade to a next level. You have it also with phones. So this kind of like shifting the thinking of I need to own all of this stuff to just if I can use the service, because that's what you really need, maybe that's enough.
I remember last year EIB invested in a Finnish company that rents out construction equipment. Are there other examples of companies that do circular economy really well? Just to give it more, just to illustrate what we're talking about. What are some of the companies that are good examples of the circular economy?
Well, I think a famous example that we have not, maybe as EIB, have necessarily been directly involved in is Philips, Light as a Service. That is an example that you find in most of the insights books on circular economy. Philips made that transition in their division, lighting division, quite a number of years ago, whereby indeed they nowadays offer light as a service. And so Philips still owns the armature and the equipment of the lighting, and they simply you pay as a customer, you pay for the light, which is a bit of a. It needs a bit of a mind shift, yeah.
So you don't buy the light bulb and then throw it away when it doesn't work.
Exactly, yeah. No, they retake it, and then they, of course, that's valuable material in there, a lot of electrodes, etc. So
and it creates the incentive for Philips to make that light bulb last, as
of course,
opposed to the linear economy where you get paid more the more it goes out, right?
Yes, because let's be clear. I mean, the circular economy is not only a nice to have proposition and environmentally friendly, and there is a hard business rationale behind that. When we started looking into the circular economy, there were different projections like 100,000, for example, of employment effects when we really truly move to a circular economy, billions of potential growth. There is a hard economic logic behind circular economy that for businesses can be very promising. Think about that you basically hedge yourself, you protect yourself against price fluctuations of rare earth materials. Think about the relation with China. Think about, who has a lot of there's a valuable material in the earth. Europe doesn't have that, so there is a rationale behind it I would say more and more companies start to see, more and more businesses start to see.
It does seem like there's a need for something of a shift in the way people think. You know, your training, as you mentioned, is in business change studies. If we're thinking about sharing, the sharing economy, I look at my kids. They don't like sharing. They want to have something that's all themselves. They like things. Specifically because they're new sometimes. So how do we overcome that?
Yeah. In my view, I mean, it's all about education early on. And that's something that personally I find that in the whole circular economy debate, although from a bank's perspective we look at the finance, but in the broader debate, education is lacking in my view. Thank God there are fora that we also have to help to set up, like circular economy expert groups together with the European Commission, where we're trying to now find solutions for that change in behavior, because behavior change is a long-term thing. It doesn't happen from today or tomorrow. I think it starts with training in schools, explaining to kids that there is a need for a new logic. To give you a bit of a silly example, maybe. Apparently, the economics books that are being used for teaching, economics students today are similar than the ones that were used maybe 20, 30 years ago, which means that the logic, the business logic, the economic logic, think about Keynes, the Keynesian model, these models have not changed over time, at least not in what we are teaching our younger students today. So there is a need for that. And I think that there are a lot of professors and a lot of people around that realize that and try to bring in new economic concepts. And I think that's what needed. But it starts with training, in my view, communication training, as education as early as possible.
So you don't approve of the recycling of the economic textbooks in the classes?
No, I don't approve of recycling in general, because that is...
It needs upgrading.
It needs upgrading. It needs upgrading. We should go along with it and keep the good parts, but add new parts. And that's exactly the circular economy logic, right?
But Lisbeth, what do you think? Should we have a system of labeling and certification of these circular economy businesses so that people would know which companies to bring their business to? Kind of like right now there's signs on products saying that this company recycles or this company uses fair trade products, but should there be a separate scheme for circular economy?
Well, that would help, because I think that we as consumers, we want to do good. And if we have a label that specifies this is a cradle to cradle or eco-designed product, and you know where to bring it back to, then you will do it maybe. But you need this kind of incentive also. So as long as you don't really get something back, if you return it, people do not really get the incentive to really turn it back. But if your phone, for instance, really has a value at end of life, you will turn it back. And if you design it in such a way that you can retrieve these materials back, the manufacturer will pay for it to get his materials back. Because in a current environment, the prices of raw materials go up and down. And if you have a source that you know already, and at what you have to pay for it, then you really do it. You really want to get back these materials.
What's cradle to cradle?
Cradle to cradle is designing in a way that cradle to cradle is really getting back your raw materials back to where they were. Your product is born, and then you get it back to where it was produced. So it's going into the cycle. It's really similar to this eco-design principle.
So this idea of raw materials that you're talking about a lot, I see that referred to as natural capital.
Yeah.
And that takes us into another sort of capital, which is the kind of capital that banks come up with. Arnold, you mentioned, that this is a serious business proposition. So presumably banks are looking at it to see how they can become involved and how they can make a profit out of it. What is the role of banks in the circular economy at the moment?
Yeah, I think you're quite right. I think the banking world, the financiers are our key stakeholder in this whole circular economy transition, which is also a term I would like to use. I think what we see today, of course, the role of the banks, in say, is to provide finance, right? To provide capital for healthy projects, for good projects that are important. I think the role of the EIB, maybe as such, as a public bank, is also one of trying to lead in certain areas and maybe also take a bit more risk than others are prepared to do, which we are doing under EFSI, for example. But it's not purely financial. I think that the role that we have played also together with our colleagues also in Innovation Finance Advisory is basically to try to bring stakeholders together to think about what does a transition to circular economy mean for the type of investments that companies are making. What kind of projects do we see? What are the risks involved? Because take as an example a company that indeed moves from sales to leasing. So the typical model underlying a use type of business models, not the owning but the use. This means de facto that as a company you would have less cash flow at a certain point in time because it is being delayed. You get smaller portions and spread out over time. Mm-hmm. Now, if that company would come to us or to any financier for a loan, that of course has implications because the company is less cash ripe than maybe in another situation. Hence, is perhaps a little bit more risky in terms of repayment. So we need to think differently. There's a lot of progress that's being made with different banks and also initiatives that we are thankfully involved in how to approach this. Perhaps find new ways of looking at the risks associated with circular economy.
And maybe not only the risks, because we are quite used to looking at risks.
Exactly.
But the circular economy also has benefits.
Yeah.
It has this job creation, it has this environmental benefits, which are not really rewarded when we look into these projects. We look really with our linear glasses to these circular projects, but we should also consider the circular benefits and also the linear risks, because we are still looking at production processes that rely on these virgin, scarce raw materials, but we don't really consider them when assessing it, our investment decision.
Yeah.
So we are very used to looking at the climate risk and we take that into account, but we should also look into these circular benefits and these linear risks.
You mentioned Philips as one example, so it's a very, very big company. But I think there are a lot of rather small companies that are involved in the circular economy. Can we give the listeners an example of one of those, perhaps?
Well, I mentioned this renting of washing machines. So it's a kind of rental service. They rent out very high quality washing machines, and you just pay for the performance, so the number of washing cycles you want to do. This is a very small company, but the issue that they have is that currently washing machines are not made in a way that are easy to repair or remanufacture, so they have to think along with the manufacturer of these washing machines. So to think that circular economy can do it all by yourself, it's more about cooperation, collaboration within the value chain. So these small companies, they have to work together maybe with these bigger washing machines producers to all think in the same direction. And then you have a whole value chain turning circular.
Arnold, Lisbeth, thank you so much for coming and talking to us today on the podcast, A Dictionary of Finance from the European Investment Bank. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, all those other places that you listen to podcasts on your phone, which hopefully is a circular economy style phone. And be in touch with us if you'd like to know, or actually if you have an idea for a circular economy project. Be in touch with us on Twitter at EIBMatt, EIBMATT.
Or at $Tankler, ALLARTANKLER.
Is there another place where people can get in touch with either our bank or another bank which would be able to... Oh, hold on.
They're already calling.
Yes.
Based on this podcast.
Is there another place where people could get in touch with either for advice a specific bank that's very big on doing these things and likes to give loans to small businesses?
Yeah, I mean, they can approach local banks who often are partners of the EIB as well, but they can also directly contact the EIB. There are different channels. There is a general information channel, info desk, that they can contact. So they can contact Innofin Advisory through the email. There is a dedicated email box for that. But they can also go through the hub, the European Investment Advisory Hub, which is a big channel, actually, was created on the EFSI to indeed be the gateway, the portal to project holders in order to support them technically and financially.
Fantastic. So if you do have an idea, try that way. And also let us know if you've been in touch at EIBMatt, at Alar Tankler, and we will be talking to you again next week about another part of A Dictionary of Finance from the European Investment Bank. Thank you.